Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Titan Company Limited Q3 FY20 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. C.K. Venkataraman, Managing Director of Titan Company Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, all of you. It's wonderful to see so many of you on the call. Before I share highlights of the quarter, I'd like to quickly call out people who are with me this side. Ravi, CEO of the Watches and Wearables Division; Ajoy Chawla, CEO of Jewelry Division; Saumen Bhaumik, newly become CEO of the Eyewear Division; Suparna Mitra, Chief Sales and Marketing Officer of the Watches and Wearables Division; Rajeshwari Srinivasan, Chief Operating Officer of Taneira; Manish Gupta, Chief Operating Officer, Fragrances and Accessories; and of course, Subbu, CFO; Nandu, his deputy; and we have Ramachandran, Pulkit, and Govind from the Finance Department; and Rajnarayan, our Chief Human Resources Officer. So welcome to the call. Once again, it's been quite a satisfactory quarter. If you were to look at the retail sales slide, which is, I think, slide number page 42, you can see the performance in the quarter for the main formats of the company: the World of Titan, Helios, CaratLane, Tanishq. They're all ahead of. I'm sorry. I have a bad cough. Bear with me. All these formats grew in retail sales YOY better compared to Q2 and H1 of FY20, and in a way, in line and slightly in excess of the estimates that we had declared on the last call. So from what we read about the competitive performance, particularly in jewelry and watches, we are clear that we are continuing to gain ground and market share. Our assessment is that compared to our 16% growth of Tanishq, by and large, the industry was in high single digits or maybe was low double digits, which confirms our double-digit decline, which confirms our continuing trend in market share gain in this situation. And even in the watch business, the performance has been very similar. We are sort of ruling the roost in the department stores with the Titan brand, the toughest environment with all the international brands that you can name fighting neck to neck with Titan, and Titan emerging well-deservedly at the top. So overall, the retail sales growth performance was very good. The primary sales growth was a little muted, relatively speaking, in the jewelry business. We had a base effect in terms of a large institutional order of coins in FY19, and that was an unlike-to-like situation for FY20. In the watch business, we had some pressures on the trade side of the business, which, of course, finally caught up back in the month of January. So the results take into account all this, and overall, we are reasonably satisfied with our performance. And I have nothing more at the moment to add to individual businesses. I think the CEOs are here, and we can start the Q&A, and then I'll come in appropriately as and when. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on the touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Abneesh Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Sir, good set of numbers. My first question is on Taneira. On a base of seven stores, you added three stores this quarter, and you have expanded to new cities, Pune, Mumbai, in the last two quarters. My questions are, how is the sales per square feet in this format, and what is the gross margin and EBITDA margin on a longer-term basis? Are you also looking at departmental stores in terms of the brand? Because you do operate in most of your businesses in the departmental stores, so will this brand also be taken into that in the medium long term?
Avnish, full marks to you on totally surprising us with the first question. It's a great thing that you are asking a question about Taneira, which is going to be a big bet for us in the future. Yes, the customer value proposition of Taneira has been very, very squarely built. We are very convinced about the differentiation that we have brought into this unorganized kind of market with a national brand and a national chain. The metrics that you're talking about, gross margin, sales per square foot, stock turn, and all that are currently in our focus. Our emphasis in the next one or two years is going to be actually building acceptable levels of gross margin, acceptable levels of sales per square foot, so that franchising becomes a viable, explosive way of growth, and thereby we can gallop towards FY25. So at the moment, I am not in a position to share information on gross margin, sales per square foot, or EBITDA. In any case, is academic at the moment. It's a startup business.
But sir, one follow-up. In terms of expansion plan, at least you now go aggressive because two quarters itself, I think five stores have been added.
Yeah.
Is that bit of confidence has come?
Yeah. We're very confident. The reason why we set up those stores is we wanted a certain kind of coverage of the country in terms of cultures and catchments and all that, so that we can build the business in a proper manner. So we're going to take FY21 to do that, and thereafter, thereafter actually take it into an explosive growth of expansion. So we have now high streets, some villas, some mall stores. We have a good mix of formats, regions, and cultures for us to now sort of fix all the operating parameters for building the growth thereafter.
So my second and last question is on the jewelry business. When I see the like-to-like growth, Tanishq and CaratLane have seen a very different kind of a movement. So Tanishq, the like-to-like growth has actually accelerated this quarter versus the first 6 months. So 9 months is 7%, and this quarter is 9% in terms of like-to-like growth. CaratLane, there's a significant slowdown. From 23% for the 9 months, it's only 14% in this quarter. So what's why this divergence is there? And in CaratLane, why there is a bigger slowdown compared to, say, Tanishq?
Actually, see, CaratLane has got the two-pronged approach, Avnish. One is the retail store, and what you see here is a retail store thing. CaratLane also has a big online business, and the online growth continues unabated. So I wouldn't go so much by one particular quarter here. I would like to see a more secular aspect here. On a secular basis, I'll just go back to that. So if you look at a like-to-like growth of 23% for 9 months, it's a very, very handsome growth in any business today. And I would look at it rather than, wonder why 14 happened versus Tanishq being better and all that. But 9 is anyway lower than the 14 of CaratLane. So to that extent, it doesn't matter so much.
And so one last follow-up. So Q4 marriage days looks good. And base also turns quite favorable for the jewelry business, just 21% versus 36% in Q3. So any comment on, say, Q4 and how you are seeing FY21? I know guidance you may give a bit later, but any sense on FY21 based on qualitative?
Hi, good evening. This is Ajay Chawla, CEO of the jewelry business. So yes, Q4, the marriage dates are good and the outlook continues to be good but also volatile. We see opportunities for market share gains continuing in Q4 for us. In terms of outlook for the quarter, we are staying with the earlier guidance that we gave. Between 11 to 13% is the kind of growth that we are expecting to hit for this quarter. FY21, we would like to come back to you in May once we have kind of, you know, assessed the market even better. We are still in the process.
Okay. Okay, sir. That's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhi Mehta from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So I had first question was on the watch segment. I wanted to just understand, has this weakness that you've seen in the watch segment kind of come off now? Because you said something about the trade channel, now getting into the base in January. And if that is the case, would you now reiterate that double-digit sales growth guidance that you had shared in the last quarter? And the second is also the expectation of the watch margin, if you could share that as well.
I missed the first line. What is this thing?
What I said was the retail sales growth was good in Q3.
Yeah.
But the brand
trade is
a trade channel, but it's come back.
So overall growth in January has been good. See, the trade channel is still under pressure in terms of the liquidity crunch, in terms of stocks with the distributors. So it hasn't eased out completely. And it will take, I think, the next 2-3 months for the trade channel to ease out, and that is the largest channel for us. Retail, as you know, has done pretty well. So overall, January has been a much better month than December. If you look at the last quarter, October, November was very good for us. It was only December which wasn't as good. So overall, quarter three results were good on the retail front, as you said earlier.
Okay, and the margin side, sir, how should we see that, given what the trade weakness that you're kind of alluding to?
Yeah, so this quarter is low on account of various reasons, and it's down to 8%. But I think we hope to end the year where we want it to and where it's been so far. So quarter four will not be like quarter three.
So you mean yearly it should be at least flattish, is how it should, from an annual basis, that's not that quarterly only, but yearly.
We hope it will be comparable or slightly better than last year.
Okay. Okay, sir. And sir, the second bit was on the jewelry margin, sir. If you could help clarify or kind of explain what is this channel mix impact that you alluded to and which you highlighted, and how should we look at margins as we trend forward, given that the salary mix typically kind of improves in the next quarter. That's all from my side.
So with regard to channel mix, we have three different channels, L1, L2, L3. The L1s are company stores, company managed stores with company inventory. L2 are company inventory but franchisee managed, and L3 are inventory and managed by franchisee. So we have been seeing higher growth in the L2 as well as L3, which is the franchise stores. Many of these franchise stores are also in smaller towns, and we have also expanded in many towns. So we have been seeing higher growth there. And the management commission that you see is linked directly to the L2 stores, which is showing a higher growth than our overall growth. And therefore, the channel mix is accounted for that difference. In terms of the operating margin, I think quarter four, yes, traditionally has been a better operating margin thanks to the studded mix being higher. And we expect that to continue like previous years. And therefore, it should be a better operating margin, hopefully, in the quarter four.
If I may just add, like, when you said L2 has seen stronger growth, would that also be kind of weighing on working capital, or it's only the exchange that would be the reason?
Sorry, bringing down working capital? I didn't understand.
So, given that L2 has seen stronger growth rate versus L3, does that in any way result in higher working capital as well for the company, given that we are... Or no, it doesn't.
No. So L2 and L3 both have seen good growth compared to L1. I think working capital, yes, is a function of our inventory in L1 and L2 stores. And that's also a function of both the gold rate as well as the absolute tonnage of gold that we're seeing. Because gold rate is been volatile and going up, that has also been taking up our working capital.
Okay, sir. And so the expectation with you said would be continuing to be better. Thank you very much. I'll come back in the future for any other questions. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manoj Manan from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. The first question is actually on the expansion, in the Tanishq, part of the portfolio. Just trying to understand that given that we have seen a good expansion, it was a relatively muted 1H and then suddenly we have seen an acceleration. Just sort of a thought process, not for the next quarter, little ahead of that, how do I think about expansion in general? Just not trying to get a number for FY21, but whether it's number of cities or square feet or kind of, any directional comment would be very helpful.
Yeah. So expansion has been a good growth driver for us, and we have seen very good results over the last couple of years. So like this year, we are continuing to put pressure on expansion. In fact, we are not letting the foot off the pedal because we see the opportunity continuing and delivering good results. So directionally, like we have pushed hard this year, we will continue to push hard next year in terms of number of stores that we add or square footage or even towns. In fact, we are looking at adding many more towns next year. And that's the thrust of our expansion.
Okay, understood. Second question is actually one on the mix and second on the margin levers. The first question is actually, sub-question is on the mix part of it. Is it fair to say that we have actually seen somewhat a deterioration in the gold mix?
Well, I wouldn't say that. Quarter three, we saw a better studded ratio, but I cannot say that because even if I look at January month, we are seeing a good resurgence in gold. It's difficult to predict because the two segments are kind of behaving independent of each other. They are not kind of linked. So we are seeing a lot more people come into the market despite a studded activation on at this point in time. We're actually seeing a good traction on plain gold, both the non-bridal or bridal as well as gold coins. So it's difficult to predict.
So
we are independently targeting the respective segments and the mix and the studded ratio that emerges is an outcome.
No, I'm not referring to the studded part of it at all. I'm only referring to the gold part of it because the grammage, let's say, for the quarter is -5, revenue is 11, and as per the presentation, page number 51, the price is +19.20. So when I add everything together, it does appear that there is a gold mix deterioration. I know it's a quarter one, but the reason I ask is because there is another trend which we've seen in the past that when gold prices are essentially higher, consumers tend to move up from gold to studded itself. So I'm just trying to understand within gold the mix part of it.
No, sure, there's a grammage drop, but I think that's a lot to do with customers having a certain budget in mind when they are coming in to buy. So they do tend to downtrade on grammage when gold prices are up.
Okay, so there's basically nothing material to call out in terms of any consumer behavior within gold which impacts the gold mix without taking the standard at all.
No, nothing. I wouldn't.
Okay, understood. And quickly, just on last one on the margins, some statistics would be helpful in terms of, let's say, what's the percentages of exchanges, exchange gold which you have currently and what are you aspiring that number to be in the medium term? And secondly, one conceptual question which has got in sort of a linkage to your margins is that, if in a scenario of some stability in gold prices, and let's say volumes for the competition comes back, is it fair to assume that, because a lot of these jewelers actually don't hedge and they're actually sitting on a lot of inventory gain would increase their ability to actually increase discounts versus you, who's a 100% hedged, operator.
Okay, so two questions. Let me answer the first one. You wanted to understand what is the contribution of exchanged gold. We are seeing continued good response on exchanged gold. We are seeing good growth. Gold exchange now is, I'm excluding the Tanishq exchange, just the old gold exchange is now sitting at a 33% contribution for the year. And you can add up another 9% which comes from the Tanishq exchange. So we are seeing a growing trend of exchange gold. The second question that you asked was about whether competition, because they are sitting on, you know, higher value of inventory. See, the offers are on continuously even now because the market is really down, single or even high single digit or double digit declines. So the market and competitive situation is pretty aggressive. There are constant offers even now as we speak because of the wedding season, etc. There are significant offers in the market. So one is unable to make out whether it is because of the hold that they are sitting on or because of the need to clock in some growth. Having said that, our understanding on the ground is that several local players and regional and, you know, smaller unorganized players are facing a significant liquidity crunch, and therefore freshness of merchandise in their stores is a concern. So to that extent, it has its impact for them in terms of the capital that has gone up, the capital and liquidity crunch that they may be facing.
Understood, understood. That's very helpful. Just to confirm, so if when I on this comment about exchanges, so that's 33+9, 42%. So that's the share of exchange gold in the overall portfolio. It's largely the same, right? It's not really gone up or down.
Not significantly in this quarter, maybe a couple, 1 percentage point.
Yeah. Thank you so much, and all the very best team. Good performance.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arnav Mitra from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My first question was on the jewelry margins. Is there any inventory gain or hedging related gains in the quarter, given that the gold prices moved up very sharply towards the end of the quarter?
Not really, Arnav. Hardly anything compared to last year, etc. I think within the quarter there have been some swings, but for the quarter as a whole, it's not been anything material. Yeah.
Sure. Just one question on the margins again. So actually last 2 years, before last 2 years, your third quarter margins in jewelry were always below the second quarter because third quarter has low studded share. Now in the last 2 years, this year and the previous year, we are seeing that trend reverse and the third quarter being much higher than the second quarter. Anything specifically which has led to this despite the fact that the studded shares are much lower in the third quarter?
No, I think overall in this quarter I can say that we have kind of held a tight control over the discount payout. That has helped. And we have also actually held a tight leash on costs. So consequently, we are seeing a better kind of margin performance than quarter two. Quarter two also had a challenge in terms of growth. So that impacted the overall EBIT margin.
Okay, sure. And my last question was on the demand environment. So you, I think, alluded that December had seen a bit of a softness. Was that largely to do with the increase in gold prices towards the end of December? And unlike in, let's say, July period when, you know, that softness lasted for a while because gold had moved up, have you seen a better recovery in January after that gold price moved up?
So, yes, December was a softer demand. If I were to kind of disaggregate growth, while we are seeing a 15% growth for the quarter three, we saw 20% growth if you look at October, November, and there was a 4% growth in December. Unable to say whether it was due to the gold price surge towards the end, but we did have an offer which kind of ended on 16th of December, and thereafter we saw a drop in growths, or in fact, that's how the growth came down. In Jan, per se, the first week we saw a surge in gold prices, and that did impact walk-ins and overall demand. In Jan itself, demand has clocked back in the moment our activation. We started our activation a week later this year. Therefore, in the month of Jan, the first week was soft. Thereafter, it's been quite good.
Okay. Thanks. That's it from my side. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tejas Shah from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, last quarter we were saying that a bulk of custom duty related inventory gains will show up in this quarter. So anything you would like to call out in terms of margins?
We did have some custom duty gains, but that's sort of petering out at this point in time. But yes, between the first, second quarter and the third quarter, we've had reasonable gains.
Second question is pertaining to GHS. What was it?
Let me also clarify one other thing. In a way, last year, the year before, we did have a lot of Contango gains, which we are not getting now. Okay, so in a way, they are comparable. The amounts that we got this time may be comparable to what we otherwise got last year in the Contango part, because we were able to hedge outside India, which is not happening now. So
the gross margins are.
So they are comparable. Therefore, they are comparable from that perspective. Yeah.
Okay, got it. Contribution of GHS this quarter. How much was that?
I don't have the quarter, but I know the GHS contribution for the year is sales through GHS stands at 21%. Yeah, I don't have the figure on the quarter right now, but let me see if I can pull it out and share with you later.
Sure. And so lastly, what you spoke about demand trend being relatively better in non-urban centers. Now, if we compare with other consumer sectors' results so far this quarter, the trend is slightly reversed. Basically, urban centers are showing relatively better demand robustness versus the non-urban. So, is there any wedding-related uptick which you are seeing in the centers, and the non-discretionary or the discretionary part of the demand is still subdued in even in the centers?
So let me kind of correct that a bit. It's not about urban and non-urban. We are seeing differential performance across different cities and regions. We've seen a higher growth in the east and in the south, whereas demand has been soft in the north and the west. I wouldn't really call it urban or non-urban. Sure, the smaller towns, because the base is low and it's a newer set of stores, will tend to show higher growths, but they also contribute a lesser amount.
Also, one other perspective on this is that more and more of the stores that we're opening each year are L2s. So when the stores of FY19 do a full 12 months in FY20, the L2 channel base gets that additional kick in, and therefore it shows a 22% growth, for example, as opposed to the L1 or the L3.
That's all from my side, and all the best, sir.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Jay Gandhi from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Just wanted to understand this. So if you could help me navigate through this theoretical construct. If gold exchange goes up, does the capital base also increase? And if it does, is my understanding correct that the upselling opportunity that it presents and its trickle-down effect on EBITDA helps you more or less manage your ROC on the product, on the exchange product? But if your upselling opportunity is significantly lower than you envisage, the capital base will keep on increasing, but you will not get the throughput that you...
So let me just explain this part. The way you have to look at exchange gold is akin to buying gold on spot, okay? Which means that the capital employed would be higher if we were to buy gold on exchange. But as you know, we have been using exchange as a customer access tool for quite some time. And there is an inherent upsell which happens, which is very significant, in excess of 50 to 60%. Every time you do an exchange. So exchange helps us actually getting customers, and while it does increase the denominator, which is the capital employed, and possibly to some extent the cost of buying gold, because the offers that we give are very attractive these days, it's a customer acquisition program. And therefore, while the ROC might be slightly later, EBIT could be much better if we do better on the margins and profitability. So in a way, we've not really seen much of an impact on ROC because of this. Having said that, if we were to see what happened this last quarter, where we've actually reduced gold purchases substantially, and we have most of the gold that we have acquired has been on exchange, then to some extent you may see some impact on ROC temporarily. But so long as we keep buying gold on lease, to the extent of 50 to 60% of the total gold that we buy, I think ROCs overall will be in the ballpark that they are.
No, fair enough. So basically, we're banking on that cross-selling opportunity being significantly higher, that 50-60% upside that we have. But what if this 50-60% A, either structurally comes off, or B, just because of the trying external environment comes off, can unfortunately the ROC shrink maybe in, for the time being?
So one answer to that is there is a certain level of attractiveness of the exchange that makes for customers to come to us, and therefore the, for the share to be at 40%. I mean, hypothetically, supposing we're at 80%, your question is that the balance sheet will change, the capital employed will increase substantially, and the ROC may fall for the same level of sale. Obviously, that 80 won't happen all of a sudden. We're at 40 today. And therefore, we will need to judge the difference between what Subbu was saying, that the EBIT expansion opportunity that is sitting in the extra sale that comes with the exchange, and the consequent bloating of the capital employed, and therefore, is it worth doing? So I guess if it is not worth doing, we can always change the pricing of exchange and sort of put a, in a way, a impediment to the people who are more value-seeking to come. That's how we will, just a thought off the cuff, I'm just saying, but that's how I would look at it if it was happening.
Fair enough, that really helps. The other thing is you help us understand how much is the exchange gold pass. How much would the gold on lease part be, for the year or for 3Q?
So for the quarter, gold on lease has practically been single digit, because we really clamped down an inventory purchase because of our shortfall in sales from our internal targets. We were running at a much higher level by September, but we brought down the inventory level very sharply by December. So from an overall quantity perspective, we are actually well within what it was in the year before, or for that matter, even what it was in March. So we've done very well on that part, but what it has done is that we have therefore not bought any gold on lease. That's the impact. But going forward, as we start buying more gold, you will find more of that coming out.
Sure. So just one last thing, if I could slip in. How much would be the wedding contribution be to our sales number?
Yeah. So wedding contribution is 23% for the year. Currently.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks a lot, sir.
And on the other question that you asked about gold on lease purchase, for the year we are at around 36% of our procurement is gold on lease.
Okay. Thank you. That helps.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Sachdeva from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening everyone, and thank you for taking my question. Very good set of results. So, one question, obviously, like, Venkat would always talk about how the January has been. So, how the studded promotion is tracking till date? I mean, if you can give us some guidance, how the January sort of shaped out. In case I missed that question, I just got missed out of the call a bit in a minute.
Sure. Yeah. Hi.
Nobody asked this question so far.
Hi, Amit. Ajoy here. January has begun a little slow for us, as I was sharing in an earlier question. The first week, there were two things. One was the gold price shot up, and thereafter it stabilized. Second bit is we started our activation a week later. We started on the 8th. So we had a good initial preview, and the activation is tracking well. For the month of Jan, our overall growth is soft at 8%, but we are not too worried about it, because we can see that the activation traction has picked up well, and we will cover up in the rest of the one and a half months or so that we will be running this activation. So our overall guidance for quarter four continues to be similar to what we shared last time, between 11 to 13%.
But if I'm correct, 11 to 13, Ajoy was a guidance for the full half, and you already done 11 on a very high base. So I would assume that when you gave a guidance of 11 to 13 for the full second half, which would imply maybe the guidance implied Q4 to be 15 rather than 11 to 13. Are you sort of being less confident about that kind of number, or is that we misunderstood last time?
No, I'm not being less confident of the number. quarter three certainly was a high base, and we also had institution sale in quarter three. So while we are showing 15% growth in retail, we actually have 11% growth on NSV. For quarter four, as I said, one, Jan has been soft. The first week was soft. And last year in March, we had a fabulous sell. So the base was very, very high last year in March.
Sure.
So definitely the base effect is playing a role. And we think we should be in that ballpark even in quarter four. We are at 8% right now.
Okay, understood. Understood. That's helpful, Ajoy. Ajoy, the second bit on expansion, it's a great expansion of about 34, 35 stores till date, and that it is evident that the push will continue. What comes to my mind is that as you sort of roll out, and I assume that tier 2, tier 3 town are the focus area where marginal area is coming. So do you see some sort of effect where tier 2, 3 towns as they open, it might weigh on the growth of nearby towns, which might be the feeder towns earlier for those towns? And do you see some effect of cannibalization happening? Do you see some conflict or in the channel which is weighing, or is it something that its planning is so judicious that it is not impacting any of your channel partners, your marginal expansion?
We are expanding both in tier 2, tier 3 towns as well as in certain cities where we see opportunities in catchments. So the expansion is going on. And yes, we do look at what is the potential cannibalization and what's the overall growth. So far, what we've seen is that the new stores are clocking in pretty much the numbers that, or not just clocking in, some of them even exceeding the numbers that were planned. And no, we have not seen any significant impact on in terms of cannibalization, even within the city or even nearby cities. So the opportunity seems to be quite independently high.
Also, when we do the actual expansion decision, Amit, what we do is, for example, we are opening a store in Kondapur in Hyderabad. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity in Kondapur is, let's say, 50 crores. And the contribution of people who live in Kondapur to the other stores of Hyderabad is 10%. And that is for 5 or 7 crores, let's say, the stores which are of that part of
it. Sure.
In which case, the 50 crores additional that we're going to get in Kondapur versus the 6 or 7 crores that we're going to lose as a result of cannibalization tells us that net-net it is worth, setting up a store in Kondapur. And the same thing works for every new town as well, because the new towns are typically contributing to an existing larger town nearby, and we look at the sale of that and therefore the likely loss of that and affecting it net of the new store sale.
Sure. So in that sense, that your other franchisees who are existing, I mean, they are sort of still taken care of from ROI perspective, I assume, and there is no...
They are aware that we are on a continuous distribution. They would come to know that we are setting up a store in a nearby town. It is likely to have an effect on them. They also know it's part of the business.
Understood. Understood, Venkat.
They might still be setting up that store also, in some cases.
Got it. And one last, I may slightly longer, way of thinking, as you obviously think about, India is obviously a large opportunity where expansion, penetration-led and market share gain opportunities are obviously evident. What I also think is that now the e-commerce channel is evolving well for you through Carrot Lane. And also there are some large markets like the US or China or nearby. Now the barrier to entry in those markets, I assume, is broken in terms of there's an e-commerce channel which is very developed in these markets. Have you been able to think through that there should be an operating model where you could, Tanishq being a brand now which is well known, why should Tanishq be in the US through an e-commerce channel? Especially in the SKUs that they would like to have, and there's a price advantage you can have relative to some other renowned jewelers there. Is there any thought process of international expansion beyond the Middle East that you had envisaged so far?
Yeah, very much of that nature. We have formed an international business division about a few months back, bringing all the businesses under that. And in fact, even before that, the watches division had already started selling through Amazon.com Titan watches in the US and with reasonable success. And now the IBD is seriously evaluating what you mentioned, which is taking Tanishq, Carrot Lane, Mia, maybe even Zoya to international customers and in the US particular.
Okay, that's and
the exploratory stage. And if I may add, CaratLane has seen some good initial traction on international orders and shipments.
Okay, excellent to hear that. Is there any contribution number from CaratLane that, you know, or is too early to sort of quantify anything? Okay. Okay, great. That's all for me. Thank you so much and great sort of results. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhakti Thakkar from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. This is Harith from Investec. Just one question.
Harith, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's a lot of disturbance on your line.
Can you hear me now? Is it better?
Yes, much better. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so the question is largely on the gold price increase. You know, in the past we've seen that, you know, this the sharp increase in gold prices also gives ammunition to some of the regional and smaller jewelers to kind of take advantage of in terms of higher promotions, because they do, you know, take a call on gold, you know, versus us where we are obviously hedged. Just wanted your sense on how you've seen the environment. I know you have gained a lot of market share, but over the last few months, you know, any sign that, you know, the promotional intensity would have increased from their end as they've got a little bit of a so-called lease of life because of, you know, some extra money because of the higher gold?
So I shared this in response to another question along similar lines. Competitive intensity has been going up because overall the market has seen declines, and therefore every player would like to gain as much share as possible. It's very difficult to figure out now whether it is because of them sitting on a gold price gain or generally because they would like to gain share. So overall, even as we speak, competitive intensity in terms of promotions and offers are pretty high. As I also mentioned earlier, because of this gold price increase, there's a pressure on capital employed even for jewelers and their ability to bring in freshness in merchandise, especially the unorganized players, has got impacted. So there is a, you know, both sides of the effect sitting there.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gaurav Jagani from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Sir, the question is with regards to what kind of margins can we build in the jewelry segment for FY21, given the scenario that of high gold margin, the higher gold prices, and also the fact that the number of wedding days in the FY21 would be lesser. So, I mean, what sort of margins can we build?
We will talk about this in May. Got up.
Okay, okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Vora from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. As benchmarking becomes, hallmarking becomes mandatory starting next year, how would it impact the industry? Will it have different impact in metros versus tier 2, tier 3 towns? And will you need to make any investments for that?
So it's still early days to gauge a full assessment on that. While we welcome this move, actually, it's very good because it tries to bring make a level playing field for everyone. Currently, the quality of hallmarking centers, there is a question around that, and therefore there is significant effort by the government to try and both increase the number as well as enhance the quality of these hallmarking centers. They are certainly much lesser than what would be required. So certainly in smaller towns, there is going to be more pressure. In terms of investments, no, we don't have to invest anything. In fact, technically we cannot invest in any hallmarking. It has to be completely arm's length and independent. But we are looking at enabling certain good quality players to ensure that they set up some kind of dedicated facilities for us so that logistically we are well covered. And we are pretty much aware and on the ball in terms of preparing ourselves for ensuring that there's a smooth transition. There will be a certain cost which is involved in hallmarking, but that's true for everybody. And in a way, it would impact a very marginal level, you know, in terms of pricing.
Just one statistic on this. When Tanishq was launched in 1996, around that time, the gold that we used to exchange, you know, other people's gold that we used to exchange was around 19 carats. Now, 24 years later, it is still only 20 carats, around 20.1 or something like that. And this varies across the country, but not significantly. In the south, it's better, which means that the caratage that jewelers are typically used to making and selling is of that order as an aggregate. Obviously, there are many jewelers who are selling 22 carat also. What this would mean is for them to conform to the new administration of purity. They'll have to raise their purity, they'll have to incur that cost, and they'll have to raise their prices, and that would have a beneficial advantage to the organized sector, all those players who are currently offering 22 for 22.
Yep. Would this be a bigger opportunity for you in smaller towns compared to metros, or you think the quality issues could be consistent across organized?
Right, you're right. It becomes worse in many of the small towns at maybe 19 and a half. Correct.
Sure, sure.
What we experience, yes.
Sure. Just one last question. What will be the mix of L1, L2, L3 now? I think you mentioned L2 is what is driving the expansion, right?
You're talking about share of sale or number?
Number of stores, yeah, as well as like sales.
Current number 320 total. Mostly we added L2, L3, and so
75%.
Yeah. By sale, it is still about a third each.
Yeah, one third each. Yeah.
The numbers have gone up in L2 and L3. We'll get back to you with an exact split. Don't have it right away.
Sure. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sabyasachi Mukherjee from Centrum Portfolio. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. You mentioned that going ahead, L2 store expansion will be at a faster pace, and you see a bit margin drop was attributed to a higher commission paid for the L2 agent commission. So going ahead, do we expect margin pressure because L2 would be at a faster pace, L2 addition?
I'll just follow a sequence of thinking here. One is that we are going more and our expansion will come more and more from small towns. And small towns means franchisees, not companies. So that's point number one. And we are realizing that at the cost of borrowing that we have and the control that we want to have on inventory, and L2 makes more sense than L3 from a financial as well as an operating advantage point of view. And therefore, maybe 80% of our expansion of franchises is L2 and 20 only is L3 because of these reasons. The point in the Q3 is, among many things, one thing is the L2 commission growing at faster than sales. But that was in a quarter where the sales didn't grow much. Whereas in a quarter where sales grows, and even if L2 grows at 22, it may not matter. So it is not having a bearing on the EBIT margin profile of the business.
Okay. This commission paid to these franchises, is based on sales or it is on something?
See, earlier it used to come above reported income.
Mm-hmm.
As a franchisee, an L3 and L2 are actually performing the same service.
Right.
For the company to the customer. And earlier we used to report the L2, the commission on sales to L2 as well as commission on sales to L3 above the net sales value. Whereas, I think about 2 years back,
India.
So under India, it has come down.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't even have seen it. It would have just gone up.
And now this is reflected, captured in other expenses?
Sales overheads, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's in sales overheads.
Okay.
So for that channel, that channel has grown 22%, so the commission has also grown 22%. So it's not a, but that channel is, the total growth has been only 8 or 9 or something, 11, sorry. So quarter 3?
Retail is?
No, not retail.
Primary, 11.
So the L3 and L1 have grown at a lower rate, and L2 has grown at 22%, the net being roughly half of that. So in this quarter, it shows up like that because of the difference.
Okay, so L2 grew at 22% and the blended is around 11% and the other two
yeah,
is...
Also, like I explained,
in
this year, the annualizing of the new L2s also has this impact. It's not as if like-to-like L2s have grown at 22%.
It's a like-to-like
situation here, and that may not repeat every year and because the bases may be much bigger and smaller and so on.
Right. Got it. And one more thing on the EBIT margins, actually, I was going through the presentation. If I look at the segments, be it jewelry, be it, watch, and eyewear, if compare Y on Y, the EBIT margin on, each segments, we see a drop, 20-30 basis points here and there. But when I look at standalone or console, the EBIT margins are higher. What am I missing here?
Yeah, I think we had the ILFS thing last year, if you remember. We made a provision for the quarter. So they are not actually
in the division.
Yeah, they are not in the division. Yeah, they would be in corporate.
Right, okay.
Sort of the negative is the positive.
Yeah, that's it.
Got it. One last thing on the...
this time as well, but... The
IRFS
one was much...
Right. I now recollect it. Fine. One last thing on the comparable Ind AS numbers. What is the rental impact? I saw it in the 55 crores in the standalone. What would be the console impact?
Yeah, I think there is a chart there on page 43. If you see the Ind AS impact is there.
I think that is a standalone.
Console, not much of a difference. Yeah, I mean, it's only carat claim is there and nothing much really.
Oh, it would be, not very much...
Not very different.
Okay, not very different. 55 crores, I can take the number. Oh. Fine, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chanchal Khandelwal from Birla Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Congrats, Kitty, on the good set of numbers. Just one question on your expansion plan. When you're saying you'll go deep in L2 and L3 and go deep in number of cities, but if I look at your presence in the top 20 cities, still you can go much deeper. Why are you focusing on L2 and L3 and not L1 now? The reason I'm asking, you're already in 200 cities and you have 300 stores. So if you do just enough match, your top 20 cities still can be far, far superior than what you are today.
Is your question about that we should be expanding more in the large cities?
Yeah,
or
more
is the question
city
about
more.
Why not L1 or both?
Both, sir.
Actually, we had about 2 years back, we had created a pipeline of about 250 stores over 3-4 years, including in the large cities. So the emphasis, the push for Middle India is not necessarily coming at the cost of a lack of focus on the larger cities. In times like this, when the consumer sentiment is a little down, then we are a little more watchful and we don't open the 7th city in an Ahmedabad or the 18th city in a Mumbai or the 27th city in an NCR Delhi kind of thing and hold for a little while, whereas open the Alwars, open the Ganganagars and so on priority. So that is the background. Otherwise, no important catchment in existing cities is left unoccupied. So it's very much part of that. In fact, even in the 50s that we will end up opening this year, I don't know, maybe 15 or 17 or something like that is in existing cities and the balance 30 are the new towns. Whereas the L1 question is different because only in the big cities, metros, do we want to open L1 for reasons of, cost as well? Because when things don't go as well, for example, this year has been a little muted overall. That we're holding only some of the stores is a big advantage for us. If all stores were L1, last year would have been a blockbuster, but this year would have been a big problem.
So that's useful. And secondly, on the size of the store, when you go to L2 and L3, do you normally have a smaller size of the store, or you tend to maintain that 3,000-4,000 square foot?
No, in smaller towns, and actually even in catchments which are relatively smaller potential in existing cities, we would go for smaller store sizes. So we are typically operating in many of these tier 2, tier 3 towns at 2,000 square feet, and with an option sometimes to expand as sales grow up. So even in a big city, like just to give an example, Secunderabad, we did open at a 2,000 square foot, but we have retained an opportunity to probably expand it once we see good traction.
Sure, sure. Lastly, on the Carrot Lane, you just spoke about your international expansion plan, that Carrot Lane would be the preferred choice to do. Do I read it right? And also because Carrot Lane is more studied and lower ticket size, is that the reason?
No, no. Just to clarify, Carrot Lane has already begun, you know, its export plans in a with a certain effort level. And even in Tanishq, actually, the Tanishq.co.in, we've been exporting in very small numbers over the last couple of years. I mentioned that we have recently formed an international business division, which is going to give a thrust to this entire activity. And they are, I mean, they're part of TCL, and they're working closely with the Carrot Lane team to deliver an integrated approach to developing the jewelry opportunity in the US and other parts.
So maybe if I were to just reframe it, so you are first exploring the opportunity to do e-commerce format and then probably do a store format. Is that the
We're not looking at stores at all. E-commerce with all the brands of the company, including Carrot Lane.
Understood. Understood. Thanks, sir. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management team for closing comments.
Thank you for being on the call. Hope we have answered most of the questions that you had. We look forward to interacting with you in the future again. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.